Everybody's got a personal definition of independent living. We've kind of migrated to this topic. Jennifer's, now that the kids are gone, it's become a real passion of hers. And like I say, everyone has their own personal definition of independence. And you're dealing with the issue with your folks. I'm dealing with the issue with my mom, who sits at the front door of her house with a loaded shotgun and says, if you come here to help me, I'm going to blow your tires out. She doesn't want any help. She said, don't bring any food over to this house. Don't bring any food over. She's kind of a
She's admirable.
She's kind of an admirable, highly functioning,
strong,
hard-headed old Cajun. And I think I'm going to be there. I think I'm going to be in my mountain cabin, and I'm going to have 10 cords of wood delivered every July.
Will I be there?
And I hope so. And I'm going to have my double-headed axe, and my purpose is going to be chopping firewood for everybody in the neighborhood. I'm just going to be chopping firewood and walking and hiking with my dogs and riding my horses.
Well, hopefully your children, actually you're saying it right here out loud on the radio, so hopefully your children are also aware of what your wishes are so that they can be as honoring as possible. What I would say, though, is to the adult children, if you don't know that that's what your mom or dad wants, be sure that we're having that conversation. And what I would say to a senior is if your kids are too afraid to come and have that conversation with you, let's start that conversation so that they know what your wishes are well in advance. And if you want to be chopping wood out in a cabin, then let's have a conversation about how we make that happen effectively.
The numbers are just completely overwhelming. What this is going to be doing for the next 2 decades?
Well, as we watch that silver tsunami coming because of aging baby boomers, it truly is this next thing that's coming. And we in the industry are getting prepared for it. I know that I listen often enough to know that you talk about this idea of living in place. And I know Jennifer has some great insight to offer about that as well.
Well, I love that term, the gray tsunami, you know. And we all hope we're blessed with good enough health to be able to chop wood. But this class I took on, the certification class on living in place, they had us do this exercise. And I've brought in 3 pairs of glasses, and they're like the Hex Armor kind of glasses. And they've painted them up so that you kind of get the feel of what it's like to have diabetes, the spotted vision, or the macular degeneration where you just have the pinhole, or glaucoma where it's like cloudy. And that, so one of the exercises for lunch one day, we had to pick a pair of the glasses, and then they put popsicle sticks on our hands and taped our fingers together kind of to mimic arthritis, you know. So basically you're kind of walking around in the dark, you're disoriented, you can't see, and then your hands aren't working, you've got to open packages. And, you know, I was like, I don't know that I'd fix my meal very often if I had to do this, because it's just too much work, and then trying to get it in your mouth, you know. So it's, you know, it's very, very challenging to be disabled like that.
And what it does for us is it just creates a very small world, because I know that if my vision was like that, I know I wouldn't be getting out and driving. And I watched that happen with my own parents, who aged, quite honestly, much too quickly because of some health issues that they had. And their world became very small. It became just their little town home, and they stayed there. And my dad was having more and more difficulty driving. And for us, that was actually where we had to start our conversation, was we had to go and say, hey, Dad, you've taught us to be honoring and respectful and to care about you. That came from your teaching. And we had to go to my dad and say, what does this look like to stop driving? And that was a terrible conversation to have, because driving marks independence for us. I mean, that is one of the things that each of us says, gosh, I can get out and go where I want to go. But we were already watching it happen. And so we went and said, what does it look like for you to stop driving? And he said, okay, I'll acknowledge I'm afraid too. And so this is an important thing for us to think about.
Wow.
But how in the world do we do life? How do we go to the doctor? How do we get groceries? How do we pick up our prescriptions? How do I keep going to church? Because that's how I connect with the outside world. If you take my car away, How does that work?
Absolutely. It's the concept of a shrinking world. Gary, let's return back to the interview with the Smecks here and hear their personal story about how they saw their parents' world shrinking and shrinking.
Exactly. I mean, Meg and I have made this decision so that we can remove our children from having to make a decision. It was tough on my sisters and me and our spouses, and so we're just trying to take that decision away from them. And I'll tell you the key, if you could assess it yourself, the trigger point is really when people become less mobile and more shut in, they lose that daily interaction, socialization that they've had all their lives. And I can tell you from observing my parents, and Meg would echo this, that their decline physically and mentally accelerated as their world got smaller and smaller. And so the best thing we could have done was put them in a community where they had daily variable interaction, conversation, socialization, stimulation. That would have been the very best thing for them. But that's not what they wanted to do. So we ended up having to split them up. Dad's needs required full-time assisted living, and Mom decided to remain at home. So,
well, Jen, I didn't mean to put you on the spot about that service, but I mean, it goes back to what we were doing back in the 90s. We actually had couples from church, young married couples from church, and we had remodeling clients that would say that would live here part-time, but their parents were in Sun City, and they would actually pay us to send this couple to Sun City. And we basically would do anything they wanted except dispense medicine. Mm-hmm. We would stop at Walgreens and pick the medicine up. We'd flip their mattresses. We'd pull the dryer out. We'd clean the, you know, we'd do the grocery shopping. We'd comb her hair, whatever it was they wanted done. And this new service is like takes that to the next level where you pay a one-time lifetime fee for having virtually everything taken care of for you by a trained attendant. I think that's going to be hugely growing for those that are committed to staying in their home. You have any experience with any of those? I mean, y'all had caretakers for your folks for a little while at the house, didn't you?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we
continue to have 24/7 care for Mom when she remained in the home. I haven't had any direct experience with services other than, you know, employment services that provide that sort of care. But there's a friend of mine, Rosie, I was telling you about in Prescott Valley, that's experimenting with having volunteers to go and provide those services. And they're essentially banking hours of service so that when, as they age and they need those same services, then, you know, the community is going to come provide those to them on a volunteer basis, just as they provided the services when they were, you know.
They redeem their hours.
Exactly.
With the next generation of volunteers that are coming up through the ranks.
There's so much.
What an incredible concept.
There's so much opportunity for creativity and innovation in senior housing. The facilities today are so much different than the old nursing home that your parents and my parents grew up knowing and visiting. The location is, as you know, it's not Sun City anymore. It's
right.
the middle of the action.
My desire, too, is to build out just resources for the elderly, because it's also a prime time for being taken advantage of, which is hard to believe people do that, but they do.
Boy, do they. Well, John and Meg, I can't thank you enough for coming in and just sharing your personal story, your professional experience in the industry, and what y'all's personal plans are. Because like I say, I think it's very forward-thinking. Thanks a million for coming in.
Happy to be here.
There you go. John and Meg Smack talk about taking the burden off of their kids and making the decisions early on. We have here in studio this morning Mrs. Donna Taylor, Chief Operating Officer of LifeStream Complete Senior Living Facilities and Services. Donna, I think, like you say, that's a pretty forward-thinking situation. Can we talk a little bit about the expense? Because John talks about the expense of staying at home, but boy, that really ramps up as the needs increase, doesn't it?
It does. Caregiving services can run, I'm not in that business, but they can run anywhere from $20 to $25 to upwards to $30 an hour. And typically they're going to have minimum charges. And so as you start talking about it's more affordable to stay at home, I think that the first answer is yes, that's probable that it's more affordable to stay at home. But there comes a point when it's not affordable any longer and you need those services like LifeStream offers, assisted living or skilled nursing, or if there's dementia or Alzheimer's happening, then the memory support, and then it does become cost prohibitive. And there comes a balance point for that that I think you have to ask, are we really doing our very best by staying at home, or could we go to a community that offers the services that we need and re-expands that world that we were talking about? We were saying the world shrinks. Well, living in a community then re-expands that world, and you have access to services that you need, transportation and food. And because if you're not cooking anymore, you don't feel good. Jennifer talked about how the vision changes our even our ability to cook, and those services become available. And then you're also, while you're sitting dining, you're socializing with people, and our world becomes so much bigger once again, which we know for health and well-being is a good thing.
I wanted you just to explain a little bit about the home for dementia. What do you call that? That part of your facility?
LifeStream has greenhouse homes, and they have nothing to do with the gardening hour type greenhouse homes at all. They are small houses, well, not small by most standards. They're 7,000 square foot homes that have 10 private bedrooms and bathrooms for elders, and they are primarily designed for elders living with dementia, but we also provide just straight up assisted living in those homes. And they our home. They have a beautiful kitchen that is accessible to the elders who live in that house.
The thing I liked about them was all the rooms open out into this big area. So there's not hallways. You're not stuck down at the end of the hall. Everybody dines together. The kitchen's kind of open. And everybody brings their own chair. So all these little chairs were lined up in front of the TV. But it's just very welcoming. I felt very comfortable walking in. The people obviously were having a good time. They're eating together at the table. You can be with your loved one. So I just thought it was a great setup, great concept.
It's a beautiful concept that was designed specifically to deinstitutionalize the way that we care for elders. And it has all of those things we've talked about, elders needing the dignity of risk, the power of normal. What's more normal than sitting down for a meal in the company of friends and family? That's completely normal. And whether you have dementia or not, that is a normal experience that we all need. And that contributes not only to our health, where you're still getting those health services like medication management and support for personal hygiene, but you're also getting the socialization and the power of choice that leads to better well-being.
It reintroduces purpose. And, you know, I have a good friend from Eastern Alberta, and he cites a Canadian study that says when the farmers sell the farm and move in town, their life expectancy is 14 months. So they lose their purpose. So y'all's facilities allow people to not only pursue discoveries and passions that they've had their whole life, but rediscover new areas of purpose and significance. And for my mom, it's volunteering. I mean, she loves going to the hospital. She just reads to patients. And for a while there, she was massaging patients. But the hospitals actually came to her and says, no more touching, no more massaging. You can't do that. And it broke her heart because that was one of the most gratifying things the people experience. They would just thank her and look forward to her visits every day. So not losing your purpose. That's the takeaway from Rosie on the House today. We'll be back with Mrs. Donna Taylor, Chief Operating Officer of the LifeStream Complete Senior Living Facilities.